Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about health insurance specialties with the health insurance specialist, David Santana. And David is with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and he's forgotten more about this stuff than most people know. Tammy Flanagan is going to join us in a few. Yeah, but David and I will discuss. I'll probably talk more about the finance side, and David will talk more about, not talk more about, we'll talk about the benefit side. David's got a really nice PowerPoint presentation, and how should we, follow it? You're the boss here.
However, do you want to handle it? We can just highlight a few important key points in the presentations, and
Okay,
we can take it from there.
Let's do Medicare program basics, just basics. I think the folks listening know what Medicare is, but they might not just understand the alphabet soup of it all, the A, the B, C, and the D. So what's Medicare A?
All right. So Medicare is, as we all know, is a federal health insurance program for three group of people. Those who are 65. In fact, this was when the Medicare program was signed into law in 1965. It was only for people who were 65 years of age and over. So that was the simple Medicare program that was signed into law in 1965. And then in 1972, the Social Security Act was amended to include two additional group of people. Those who are or who have certain disabilities, and they go through Social Security and apply for disability, and they're found disabled 24 months after they start receiving cash benefits through Social Security. They automatically become eligible for Medicare, and therefore they get enrolled in Medicare automatically 24 months later. And then the other group of people is those who are diagnosed with end-stage renal disease, those who have kidney failure and they need either dialysis or kidney transplant to maintain life. And this is of any age. So you may find a child who was born with end-stage renal disease who could automatically get Medicare because they're born with that disease. So the myth that Medicare is just for people who are 65 years of age and over, you can see that we have many people. In fact, we have about 9 million people who are enrolled in a Medicare program because they either have disability or they have end-stage renal disease. So those are the three group of people that qualify get Medicare.
What other specific disabilities might somebody unfortunately have, but they are under 65 that would be covered under this?
Technically, any sort of disability. What Social Security is look for to grant disability to somebody is that their ability to engage in substantial gainful activity, and that is expected to last for at least a year or more, or result in death. So that's kind of the basic concept of disability benefit. So it's any type of disability that is kind of affecting somebody, their capacity to work and their capacity to earn certain amount of money.
Okay. Now, if they then do qualify, does it break into, and I'd call it the alphabet soup, the A, B, C, and D, do they have their choice as to which one they participate in? Okay, so they get in the door regardless of age because of this unfortunate malady. And then once they're in the door, A is hospital insurance, correct? I'm looking at your PowerPoint presentation,
correct.
So now I'm all of a sudden an expert.
Correct. Okay. So it is the alphabet, and we have A, B, C, and D. So the A, B part is that the A is the hospital insurance. And that is the part that 99% of individuals get premium free, meaning you don't have to pay premium for Part A of Medicare, that hospital part. And that is because you pay taxes when you were working. So if you or your spouse, either of you pay taxes for at least 10 years, you accumulated 40 quarters of coverage, you get that part of Medicare at no additional cost. And again, that's 99% of the people who get Medicare. So that's the hospital part. Now, the Part B is optional. It is optional because everybody has to pay premium. And the premium for that part depends on your income. The majority of people this year paid $104.90 for Medicare Part B. So you have the hospital, which is when the person become inpatient in the hospital. They pay for everything in general, nursing, room and board, meals, medicines, anything that you get inside the hospital. Medicare Part B is the one that pay for for doctors outside of the hospital, physical therapies, durable medical equipment, and so on and so forth. So again, those are kind of the two parts of Medicare. When the Medicare was signed into law in 1965, it was only hospital and medical part of Medicare. And then in 1977, the BBA, or the Balanced Budget Act, under President Clinton, created the Medicare Part C. Back then, it used to call Medicare Plus Choice, because what it does is actually gave an individual and Medicare the choice to get their health care through a private company, similar to what the majority of people have. That is the HMOs, the PPO, POS, point of service. So those are the type of health insurance that are also offered to people in Medicare since 1997. And the program is, I guess in 2003, they changed the name to Medicare Advantage Plan. So that is the Part C of Medicare. So let's say that an individual do not want to get Medicare directly from the federal government, managed by the federal government. They can go through a private company, and the private company will pay for hospital, medical, and everything that Medicare pays for, and they usually give you additional benefits for enrolling in a private plan.
Okay, now B comes with a premium, and we'll get into that a little bit more. I suppose C comes with a premium.
C comes with the premium, first of all, to be able to enroll in the private option. You do need to be enrolled in both Medicare Part A and Medicare Part B. So you have to pay that Part B premium. And they may charge an additional premium on top of that to enroll in the Part C. Some plans, however, waive that premium, meaning that you don't have to pay anything to join the plan, and some plans even help you pay for your Medicare Part B premium. So for some individuals, those type of plans help them a little more, because they help them with the cost of the premium, as well as they may offer additional benefits that Medicare, the traditional Medicare, don't pay for.
Okay. Now, when you mention premium, premium is dependent upon the size of one's, if you will, total income. I can use it's AGI. It's kind of your total income before your itemized deductions. Now, with regards to sensitivity to both income taxes and premiums, people, especially the FERS folks, the FERS folks have income from a defined benefit program, so they have X dollars there. They can have income, and this is key here, from their thrift and or an IRA, and they have Medicare. All righty. Now, if that income, it breaks into three groups as to its income taxation, very sensitive to income tax, although the first, if you will, stage of it is you have to have very, very low income to get out of it. If you have a little bit more than low income, then you pay tax on half your Social Security, and then it goes up to 85%, not an 85% tax, but if your Social Security, say, was $10,000, and anybody can multiply this by whatever they want, right. And they were in the highest, they'd pay tax on $8,500 of it, and $1,500 of it would be tax-free. So it's not an 85% tax. But Sometimes somebody with these three different sources of income might take more out of the thrift one year than another, maybe more out of an IRA than another. And all of a sudden, more of their Social Security becomes taxable. Their taxes go up, and then the Medicare premium goes up. So it has a synergistic effect that I don't think everybody is fully aware of. And I'll get calls, what happened? And I said, well, you took, $5,000 or $10,000 more out. Well, I did that for a special reason. And I go, well, they're waiting at the door for your special reason. And it's very hard to explain to people, but I think folks need to be aware of that, especially with a Medicare premium. Medicare premium can get up there, can it?
Oh, absolutely. Single individuals filing single taxes more than $85,000 and then married couple more than $177,000, once you get to that amount, if you enroll in Medicare, Social Security will send you a letter indicating this is your income. By the way, it's based on modified adjusted gross income. And like you said, I mean, if you take a lump sum out of your retirement savings, Social Security will get that information, and they will send you a letter. They usually look 2 years back on the taxes that you file to determine how much your premium will be for the coming year. So if you take a lump sum out, that will affect you your Medicare premium for 1 year.
And then it could go back down.
Go back down. Yeah. Exactly. But Social Security will send you a letter so they don't cut you by surprise that, oh, what happened here? Yeah. I was paying this much and now I have to pay this much. But they explain to you where they get the information. They give you the opportunity to call and file an appeal if you think that information is incorrect.
Yeah. But it usually hits somebody that takes something out of the norm.
Exactly.
Some people take chunks out to pay down their house. I'm not so sure that's the best idea, but they do it, or they have a special thing or an unfortunate special need. And then you have this spinoff, I'd say negative issues, although they still have coverage, so it's not all bad.
That's right.
All right, so should we drill down with hospital insurance, if you've paid FICA for at least 10 years, and what's covered, inpatient hospital, nursing care, home health care?
Home health care, that is correct. So if you need some sort of rehabilitation care, such as physical therapies, occupational therapies, speech-language pathologies, all these things can be provided at your home. If you are homebound, meaning that you can go to a clinic to get these services, Medicare would pay an agency to go and provide these services to you in your home. If the service can only be provided in an institution, we also pay for skilled nursing facility care. We pay pretty much 100% for the first 20 days that you stay there. And then thereafter, you have to pay about $148 a day, and we pay the rest up to 100 days. So those are kind of a couple of benefits there that not all the insurance out there cover, but however, they are covered under the Medicare program.
How about long-term care? Where do these two ever bump heads? In other words, an expense that may be covered under Medicare A is also covered under their long-term health care plan. And they either apply for it or they don't. But if they do apply for it, are they spending the money up front because they get it for basically no charge on Medicare A? Am I thinking straight with that?
Oh, absolutely. And, you're not alone with that thought, Bob. Long-term care is a question always comes up in all the seminars in terms of Medicare. And it's interesting that you mentioned that they may bump head. What we're trying to explain to individuals is that long-term care is not really a health care that is provided to an individual, but it's rather a supportive care. Medicare only pays for health care, things that, for example, those skill services, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech-language pathology. So it has to be a skilled service personnel. Long-term care is more of a supported services to help individuals prepare meals, accommodating their home so they can function properly, or even, you know, pay for somebody to be in the long-term in institution. Medicare do not pay for any of those long-term care services that is provided to an individual. So it's it is important that individuals are aware of that so they can properly plan ahead and get a long-term care policy, because Medicare do not pay for anything related to long-term care.
Okay. Now, for those of you all listening, today is April 22nd, 2013. We're at 10:20 a.m. We'll be on till about almost 11 o'clock this morning. But we're live, so give us a call should you have any questions, because you have the man here, David Santana, healthcare insurance specialist with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Now, after 11 o'clock today, you can email us questions, but you can email us questions now, but much prefer to hear you on the phone. 202-465-3080. We'll talk about the email service towards the end of the show. So let's get back in it. I just thought maybe we'd have some people listening that, like me, might not know the answer. Okay, so we talked about that. Now, paying for inpatient hospital stays. And you have a chart here, and it's days 1 to 60. You pay a deductible of $1,184. If it goes out further, 61 to 90 days, you pay $296 a day.
Correct.
And then 91 to 150, $592. And then it says 60 lifetime reserve days. Not so sure what that means. And then after 150 days, it's your baby, right?
Correct.
Now, do people buy insurance policies to cover that gap, if you will? Is that what they call the Medigap?
It is it is kind of like a gap. So the program is not, as you can see, the program is not all-inclusive. So while the Medicare Part A comes premium-free for much of the individuals enrolled in Medicare, there's usually, when you talk about insurance, there's usually two parts. There is a premium and there is out-of-pocket cost when you go and receive the services. And this applies for across the federal government. All the plans that we have functions the same. You usually pay premiums and then you pay out-of-pocket. So the Medicare Part A is not all-inclusive, as you can see. We pay based on benefits, period.
Okay, well, we just got a premium presenter, Tammy Flanagan. Well, you all know Tammy. Good morning, Tammy.
Good morning, Bob. Hi, David. Nice to see you.
Good to see you.
I was listening to the show on the way in. I thought, I'm just going to stay out here and listen. It was very interesting.
Well, I know you can add a dimension I couldn't hope to add. So anyway, we were walking through the hospital stay period and made the comment that, you know, after a number of days, you're on your own, so
to
speak.
Right.
And how might you cover that potential gap?
Yeah, that was the one thing. Medicare doesn't have catastrophic coverage, which is why you can't rely on it by itself.
Correct.
So that's where FEHB comes in for federal employees, and long-term care insurance comes in for everyone who might need that additional custodial care or personal care.
Now, so, was there a study made to come up with this 1 to 60, 61 to 99? I mean, is there kind of a norm that people don't usually stay in the hospital for more than 150 days or more than 60 days? So they try to hit the sweet spot of the need rather than cover all. Is that how they came up with that kind of three-tiered system?
I think the idea of creating the kind of co-sharing structure that kind of put the person in, I guess, in a position that they have to pay some out-of-pocket expenses, and again, apply to basically across the board. Unless you need, really need to stay in the hospital for a certain amount of days, you wouldn't want to stay there if you're going to have to assume the cost. And again, it's trying to kind of balance the cost. The government pays some, the individual pays some, and of course, as Tammy mentioned, you know, there are a certain amount of days if you stay in a hospital that you may have to rely upon another insurance that help you with that. Those who don't have access to the FEHB, the Federal Employee Health Benefits, they have to buy private policies such as Medigap plans to help defray the cost of the hospital care.
David, does Medicare Part C, do all of those plans offer catastrophic coverage if someone enrolls in Medicare Advantage?
Yes, the majority of them do. Technically, when an individual enroll in those private plans, those private plans don't really function the same way as Medicare. So all these out-of-pocket expenses that you see in there, they don't function the same. So a private plan would probably say, when you go into the hospital, you would pay $200 deductible, and we pay the rest up until they release you from the hospital. So the benefits structure on the private plan is different from the Medicare plan.
Okay. And these hospital stays should be remembered as hospital stays. That's a lot of days in a hospital. But sometimes somebody's released from a hospital and then goes to a skilled nursing facility for follow-up treatment. And I think we have a follow-up call. So good morning.
Yes. I'm a military retiree. I'm enrolled in Medicare Part B, N.A. The way I did this Medicare Part B, I'm delaying my Social Security, so I have the monthly payment coming out of a savings account. In order to have TRICARE for life, I need Medicare Part B. And I heard about this Medicare Part C. It's an advantage, whatever you want to call it. Is there any advantage for me to also be enrolled in that Part C?
There is not really. If you have Medicare and TRICARE for life, you technically have the best you can get because Medicare pays a part. And these expenses that we were mentioning that usually your responsibility.
Right.
TRICARE comes after Medicare and pay for those out-of-pocket expenses. So you really have a comprehensive package of health insurance. Starting with the fact that Medicare Part A doesn't cost you to have that. And TRICARE for life is also offered to you at no additional cost.
Yeah, what also happened to me is after a while, I retired in 1985. And then I don't know when they came up with this long-term health care from the military government or from the government. When I found out about it, it was too late for me to do anything.
Yeah, the long-term health care plan is not the same as health insurance, though.
Right.
So that would be something that if you ever needed either additional assistance that's not medically necessary. So unfortunately, a lot of people don't have that. So they rely on either family members or pay out of pocket for those services.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is basically I didn't know anything about this until after I retired. And I think it came up as 1990-something when they came up with this long-term health care from the federal government, but that time it was too late for me to do anything.
Yeah, 2002, I think, because it just had its 10-year anniversary last year.
Uh-huh. That explains
the only reason why I know. That's right.
I try to keep up with all this stuff, but you can't because you don't know what's going to be the next thing.
That's right. You just need to listen to the show every week.
But I was in Tucson at the time, so I couldn't listen to you.
Oh, yeah.
We're online.
We're on the net.
Okay, take it easy.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling. All righty. When I look at these kind of stratified dates for a skilled nursing, first 20 days, so that must tell me that the normal stay might be 20. I shouldn't say that says the normal stay, but it's 1 to 20 days. You don't pay anything. 21 to 100 days, then they get your attention because then you're going to pay up to, what, $148 a day? And then after 100 days, you got it all. So the hospital doesn't necessarily want you in there for a long time.
But once you're finished with your acute care, once the doctors have determined you're not going to have another stroke or that they've repaired your hip, but yet you still need rehabilitation, mm-hmm. you need physical therapy, you might need occupational therapy, then there's a period of time you can receive that service out of the hospital but in the skilled care facility. And hopefully you can recover within 20 days and go back home, or if not, pay a little bit more out of pocket for the next 80 days. And if not, then that's where long-term care insurance takes over.
Okay, we were talking about where that picks up and where it ends, the long-term care to be married with this.
Yeah, okay. Unfortunately, some people go into a nursing home and they don't come directly from a hospital. And if that's the case, then Medicare is generally not going to pay for that skilled nursing benefit because it's usually after a stay in the hospital that you're receiving that skilled care. So if you're not going to show any improvement, if the nursing home can't really make you better, then you're on your own or else you rely on your long-term care insurance. So you have to understand those definitions, definitely.
All righty, great. We've got another caller. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob and Tammy. Thanks for bringing in the guests, Dave there. I'm calling about I'm a federal employee, but I'm calling actually for my parents, though, who are my father's an ex-federal employee, and they both have a Medicare A and B, and they have the federal plan. Mm-hmm. But the costs are so high, and I'm considering maybe encouraging them to actually take the Medicare Advantage plan versus the federal plan. I'm just trying to find out if it's a good idea. I've subscribed to the Washington Consumer Checkbook, and it says the better advantage, of course, is still keeping the federal plan, but the cost is just so high, though. But I just want to hear some discussion about that, though, sure. On alternatives.
Which federal plan are they in, do you know?
I believe MDIP. PA. Mm-hmm. It's like a Merlin plan, though,
right.
and it supposedly it supplements the Medicare that they pay for A and they pay for B. Both my parents pay for B, but they do have MDIPA. And one thing, what happened when they switched over from the plan actually switched over from MAMSE to MDIPA, they didn't carry the name of it, so they got some problems with it and being charged 20%. Then when I did some research, basically all the deductibles were not even supposed to be paid out, though. So,
right.
But then I found out about the Medicare Advantage stuff, though, that's Part C.
Sure. Can I ask you, I can't remember off the top of my head, what's the monthly premium for MDIPA?
I think about $400 or $500 a month for the
right.
For the family plan, though. And I'm in Kaiser, mm-hmm. and then what I found out, I said, well, and my wife is a federal employee also. See, and I will probably come out cheaper by going with the Medicare Advantage plan when I become 65, though, under Kaiser, because the federal plan is higher, and I could just pay like 103 right now, and we would come out cheaper, and of course paying B Part B, both of us paying Part B.
Right. Right. Yeah, this is a big dilemma I know a lot of retirees face when they turn 65, because now you have your lifetime FEHB coverage and you
right.
now qualify for Medicare, which is with Part B an additional expense. So you try to rationalize, you know, what's the best way to receive health care once I get to that point. Two things I would say, and I'll let David comment too. He probably has something to say as well. But the one thing would be to look at there's at least 24 FEHB options your parents have to choose from in the Maryland and Virginia suburbs and D.C. So
that's
during
right.
the next open season, maybe consider even Kaiser might be a little cheaper, because Kaiser has a Medicare plan for federal retirees that maybe would work for them. It's another similar type HMO, and if Kaiser is nearby them, that might be an option. Or even a traditional plan like a Blue Cross plan or SAMBA is another good plan that's only about $300 a month for family coverage. So I would
okay.
look at some of the other federal plans that offer very comprehensive and good coverage for them and something they're more familiar with. But also another thing, if they do choose to try a Medicare Part C plan, OPM will allow them to suspend their federal health coverage for a year, try the Medicare Part C plan and see how that works. If they like it, they can stay with it. If not, then the following open season, the following year, they can re-enroll in one of the FEHB plans.
That's true. Yep.
Does that sound like a fair deal, David? Do you have anything else?
That is perfect. That is actually a perfect explanation and advice. The only thing that I think I will add to that is I believe it's Kaiser, the one that have the Medicare plan, that they do not let you suspend your FEHB. So if you join their Medicare plan, you have to keep your FEHB, meaning that you still
okay.
have to. You still have to pay the FEHB premium.
I think that's because the Kaiser Medicare plan is actually part of FEHB. So your premium
okay.
would be the Kaiser premium. But they
okay.
have a specific for federal retirees Medicare option.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't know that about the Kaiser plan. No, that's a good point. Appreciate that information.
If you go to kp.org and go to the federal link, you'll see information there on their Medicare federal option. Which
okay.
I've talked to a few people at my local NARF meetings, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association, who used that option. They seemed happy with it. So if it's convenient, because you have to be near Kaiser facility.
Right, to do that, though. Mm-hmm. I also, another point, they talked about this earlier in the program. They mentioned about the rates going up for Medicare Part B. I go with my wife on bus trips to casinos, and one thing I found out from the gray tops, basically, is that when they hit at a casino, like $25,000.
$10.99.
Their Medicare goes up.
And they withhold.
Their Medicare goes up. So I just want to make that point to everybody, too. So because I'm an accountant, and my wife is a budget analyst, and so we get discussion. How can you help me with it? And I tell them, no, there's no way you in effect can get around that, though. That's what happens.
Oh, boy,
be
another
careful
accountant.
What you wish for.
So I just want to point that out, too, so because that happens, too, when their rates go up for 1 year because they complaining about it, though. And I tell them, well, you got to itemize your losses, though.
That's right. Thanks for your call. That's interesting.
thank you, everybody.
Thank you again.
Bye-bye.
Now, he brings up an interesting, I was just looking at the change in the premiums. We don't want to scare people. Everybody's going to pay this minimum premium of, let's call it $105 a month, $104.90 to be exact. And if it's a non-married individual, it's if their total income is $85,000 or less. But if they're married, if it's $170 or less, I mean, that's a fair chunk of change for retirement. And it goes up if you go into the next, if you will, level. And for a single individual or non-married individual, it's $85,000 to $107,000. Now, that's not a huge gap if somebody was to take out a chunk of money. And for a joint return, it's $170 to $214. Again, that's very high. And the premium goes up $36 and $44, depending on which group you're in. And I probably should stay away from the other ones because that income really gets up there and it's not the norm. But if somebody's lucky enough to have over $160,000 or over $320,000 of income, then the premium isn't going to cause them to not go out and eat. Anyway, just a comment. So if you're doing your planning and you go, gee, I might need some more money next year, I'll take some more money out of the thrift, or think twice if you're close to that cliff.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to ask David about is so that you win the lottery or you win at the casino one day and that year your Medicare premium goes up. How does that work? Is it that same year? Is it the following year? And then when your income goes back down again, does it automatically adjust to the lower premium? Do you know anything about the mechanics of how that actually gets reported and when you see that increase in your premium?
Right. As soon as Social Security get the information, because every year they send all the people that are enrolled in Medicare, they send all these Social Security numbers to the IRS. And anyone who falls above those categories, if they're under the category, Social Security will not get anything back.
Mm-hmm.
If they're above those income thresholds, they will get it back saying this is where they fall. And the individual will automatically get.
So it's not until you file your tax return for that year that it gets reported.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. So don't, I could don't win go this weekend, and I really wouldn't see the increase until the year after next.
Right, or if you file an extension. Mm-hmm. So don't file an extension if your income goes down relative to what it was in the preceding year.
Well, what else I was thinking, if you know, by the time it catches up with me, I'm going to forget I won the money. I'm going to say, why is my premium going up?
They'll remind you.
So then the following year, I don't make as much money, so how does it go back down? Is it based on the same report?
Basically based on the same report, but as soon as that goes down, you want to do make sure that you get in touch with Social Security and let them know that your income have gone down.
Okay, let's keep these calls going. 202-465-3080. I think there's a huge not understanding of this, mm-hmm. including me. And these two calls were right to the point. Yep. Very good. 202-465-3080. Now, we're automatically enrolled in A and B, correct?
Depends.
Okay. What does it depend on?
It depends. If you file for Social Security retirement benefits before you turn 65, as you know, people can file for retirement benefits as early as 62. If you're receiving retirement benefits 3 months before you turn 65, you will get a nice, lovely welcome package from Medicare saying, welcome to Medicare, and it'll have a little booklet with information about Medicare and a Medicare card. Asking you, you have Medicare Part A and B. If you want to decline Medicare Part B, because that's the part that comes with the premium, You can do so by signing the card and returning it back to Social Security, saying I do not want Medicare Part B, and signing a little form saying I understand that I may be charged a penalty later if I don't qualify for a special enrollment period.
Okay, what if you're people like me and you're on this show, and last time you were on the show, you mentioned that if you were in a high-deductible health care plan, that you're not supposed to do that if you're covered under Medicare. So do I drop the plan or do I drop Medicare?
Well, we're talking about the high-deductible health plan with a health savings account. That's a tax-favored account for individuals to pay for health care. So if you have a health savings account, if you enroll in Medicare, you will automatically be disqualified for the health savings account. So you can no longer contribute to that health savings account. Of course, you can still use the money to pay for healthcare expenses, qualified healthcare expenses.
And you can stay in the high deductible health plan. You just would have a health reimbursement account instead of a health savings account.
Right. You can convert it to a health reimbursement account.
But then if that person wasn't doing that anymore, could then they come back to Medicare without the penalty?
In terms of Medicare Part A, let's say somebody gets Medicare at the age of 65, they automatically enroll in Medicare because they're getting retirement benefits in Medicare Part A. Technically, you can't really refuse Medicare Part A if you're already getting Social Security retirement benefits, because it is part of your benefits, isn't embedded in your benefits package. So in order to refuse Part A at that point, you do have to withdraw your entire benefits, Social Security claim.
If you didn't sign up for Social Security, we got a caller. I'm taking this probably too far.
It's fine, and it is important for folks to understand. So that's a great point.
Okay. Just thinking, because there are folks that when they retire, they do second careers or they do whatever.
We're getting a lot of questions about health savings accounts, and that's because the shocking is I have a health savings account and I like to keep it. What can I do? Mm-hmm. You technically, you don't have to enroll in Medicare Part A if you're not
getting Social Security.
Retirement benefits. So that's kind of the decision in there. Well, I don't have to enroll in Medicare Part A now. I like to keep my health savings account going with my high deductible health plan, which is for me and my family. So we tell an individual, you don't have to take Medicare Part A now. Whenever you retire, you can always take Medicare Part A. You will not be penalized for Medicare Part A because it is something that you pay taxes on, that you earn, you are entitled for it. So you wouldn't be penalized.
Okay, thank you. We have a very patient caller. Good morning.
Hi there. Can you hear me okay?
Oh. Sure.
Yeah, great. I'm calling, my husband and I, we're both federal employees. He's retired, I'm not, and we have Blue Cross Blue Shield. And he hit the magic number about 3 years ago, and he chose not to take Part B. Because with me working, the penalty was significant on what the premiums would be.
Who's carrying the health insurance?
We each are carrying individual plans. We have no children.
Yeah, is he also under a federal health plan?
Yes. Yes, he is. Blue Cross Blue Shield. So here's a question I had for you, and I think, Tammy, it might have been you. You discussed this perhaps maybe a year or two ago, that OPM was investigating having some FEHB plans that were designed for retirees where it covered the Medicare piece and then had the gap on top of it. Whatever happened with that?
Yeah, there is still one, and I'm not sure now if it's GEHA or Mail Handlers. You'll have to check. But
mail
one
handlers.
Of the is which one? Do you know which
mail
one?
Handlers.
Mail Handlers. Mail Handlers offers a Medicare payment. I guess they pay for part of the Part B premium if you're in that plan, but it's one of the more expensive plans to be in. Now, the other thing I was going to suggest is that it makes sense in a way for you to carry self and family coverage, so that you cover your husband under your federal health plan because you're still working. And as long as you do that, he won't be penalized to enroll in Medicare Part B until after you retire. The only thing I'm not sure, David, is since he doesn't have it now and he hasn't had it for the 3 years, he'd still incur the penalty for those 3 years that he was carrying his own health insurance, right?
Correct.
But they could stop that penalty if she picks up family.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'll be retiring within a year.
Oh, so. Well, you're not going to save too much then.
I don't think so.
No.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, that's one thing is you could look into that mail handler's plan and also maybe just look into a different federal health plan. It would be less expensive to allow him, you know, to pick up Medicare Part B, especially after you retire.
Mm-hmm.
And also say that last week in Congress, they had a committee meeting talking about Medicare and FEHB, and is FEHB still a good deal, especially for retirees? So there, you may in the future see some changes prompted from that discussion that they were having last week.
Well, I hope so. I can just tell you this. It's really complicated to figure it out.
It sure is. I try to explain it to people. That's even more complicated.
I've known Tammy 20-plus years, and I still don't understand it.
It's very complicated.
Anyway.
Okay, thanks very much.
Sure.
Thank you for calling.
We have another caller on the line. Good morning. Hello?
Hello?
Hi there.
Hello. Hello. I'm someone who follows the Medicare news. I'm over the age of 65, and I don't believe I heard this mentioned on the show so far. When the prescription drug got added to Medicare coverage, that's when they put that 85,000 or slightly lower number in threshold amount for paying higher premiums. However, does the general public understand that the Obamacare law that was recently passed took that $85,000 threshold, which was indexed for inflation previously? They got rid of the adjustment for inflation. So 10 years from now, $85,000 is not going to be worth what it is today. In addition, the current Obama budget proposal wants to change the first income rise over that $85,000, which is $107,000. They want to lower it to $92,000 and change in the year approximately 2017. At least that's what I recall. I could be off slightly. But the thing that I get out of this is they want the middle class to pay more and more and more for Medicare Part B. The people in this income group are the ones that are paying tax on 85% of their benefits. They may live in a high cost of living area like New York or Washington, D.C., but they're going to reach us. And it has to be noted how they slipped it in Obamacare. All they did was change one sentence, no adjustment for inflation.
Yeah, as one former president used to say, I feel your pain, because I do hear this a lot, you know, sentiments about the expense of health care in general and just the expense of Medicare and Social Security. And the only thing I can say to that is, you know, you need to contact your elected representatives and let them know your feelings, because our forum today is not political. It's more informative. But we do thank you for your call.
Shouldn't it be informing them of what the law is, though?
Well, we're informing them of the current law, not of what is yet to happen in the future, because the future changes, even though they may have taken place, they can still be changed again, and we don't know what it's going to look like next year, let alone 2017.
I meant my call to be informative, not to be political. I apologize if it sounded political.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for calling. We do appreciate all our callers. I think we've set another record today for callers to come in.
We need one more, and I think that will be the high watermark.
Well, she brought up Medicare Part D, which we haven't really talked about yet. And I think David would like to maybe talk a little bit about what is Medicare Part D, what's its history, and where does it stand?
Right. I just wanted to mention one thing that she mentioned, because I think her first thing is, I just wanted people to be aware that these numbers are frozen, and it's frozen by the current law. And yes, they are frozen until 2019. So unless the law change again in 2019, after 2019, they're going to go back and be readjusted based on inflation. But the law did froze those numbers until, so it's going to remain the 85,000 and the 170,000 until 2019.
Considering federal employees have had a pay freeze since 2010, their numbers may not go up too much anyway, unfortunately.
Exactly. So that'll take us to a Medicare Part D, and she mentioned also that you pay Part D premium based on those thresholds as well. So those and that change. as a result of the law that created Medicare Part D benefits, which is the prescription drug that was added to the Medicare program. In terms of federal employees, really, because the FEHB plan do offer prescription drug benefits that is as good as Medicare Part D, usually federal employees do not really need to enroll in the Medicare Part D benefits.
That's been my experience as well. It's usually A and B that's the biggest concern for federal employees and retirees especially.
All right, lucky number five. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm a civil service annuitant. I have my Medicare deducted from my small Social Security check. I am anticipating being out of the continental United States for an extended period of time, and I'd like to know the mechanics and maybe a source bulletin or citation to find out more information about suspending my Medicare payments in my absence from continental U.S. and the penalties for reinstating it when I come back.
In terms of the Medicare benefits, you know, Medicare Part A, which is the part that everyone gets at no premium, you really don't need to suspend. That part is going to remain ineffective. However, the Medicare Part B, which is the one that you pay the premium, you have the option to keep paying the premium when you get out of the country. But if you terminate that part and spend 5 years out of the country, when you come back, you will be able to re-enroll back again, but you do have to face a 50% penalty because it's 10% for each year that went by, and you could have had Part B, but you decide not to enroll. So you do have the option to get out of it and not pay for 5 years. Of course, you're going to save 5 years worth of premium, but when you come back, you will pay 50% more than the regular premium.
Yeah, I think that's a point that some people don't realize, that Medicare doesn't cover you outside of the U.S. So if you are going to live overseas or spend, like this man is going to spend a lot of time overseas, it is a valid question.
Right.
Okay, can you give me a citation to get more information, OPM, Social Security?
To get information about Part B or Medicare enrollment, you go to Medicare.gov website.
Okay, and did you say a 50% penalty?
Yes, it's 10% penalty for each 12 month that went by.
And okay, I got you.
Could
gotcha.
Have been enrolled but did not.
And if I go over 5 years,
It goes up for however long you. If you were there for 10 years, then you would be hit with 100% penalty. 20 years, 200% penalty.
So I wouldn't be terminated from Medicare if I stay over. If I go out, if I'm out of the program for over 5 years. I can go as long as I want, as long as I pay the penalty when I get back.
When you re-enroll,
correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay, could I ask a question?
Yeah.
Is that penalty then? Let's say it's X percent. Does that stay every year?
For the rest of your life.
Yeah. So in other words, if it was 100 and my penalty was $50, would it be 150? And would it be a penalty at the time that I came back? So in other words, if the Medicare premiums go up, is my penalty going to be on the increased?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's going to be whatever the going rate is.
Right.
Yeah. And then you may be 150% of it rather than just your normal price.
All right, so I hope when you're overseas, you're working and you can get the foreign income exclusion so that when you come back, at least you save the income taxes.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for your call.
Thanks.
This is a very interesting subject because a lot of people do have questions about all the little nuances of what if I do this or what if I have that. So that's good that we have this opportunity to talk.
Are there FEHB plans that would cover somebody outside the continental United States?
Almost all of them do, other than the HMOs. You know, if you have Kaiser, then of course you have to be near a Kaiser facility. But if you're in any of the traditional plans like Blue Cross and Gihun, Mail Handlers and Samba, you can use those worldwide. And some of the plans, especially Blue Cross, have offices overseas because they do service not only employees who work overseas, but retirees. We have over 30,000 retirees who live abroad.
So somebody might look at that, you know, try to balance off the penalty versus coming back and have that coverage under those plans. Anyway,
Depending on how long they're going to be gone and how long they plan to come back for.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, if you spend 5 years, you just keep in mind that, yeah, you will pay the penalty when you come back, but you have saved 5 years worth of premium.
Yeah, it's well over $5,000 even Absolutely. At the regular rate. So,
exactly.
So that's something to consider. I guess it all depends on how long you're going to live when you come back, and that's something I hope we don't know.
All right. There are things called Medicare gaps. Is that the same thing as the donut hole?
You've got your terminology a little bit confused, I think, because Medigap is a confusing thing because it's like a Medicare supplement, correct, David?
Correct.
The donut hole refers to the prescription drug coverage and the part you pay out of pocket when you're in Medicare Part D.
Correct.
So you might want to talk about both of them, but they're two different things.
Right. The Medigap is, I mean, we talk about how much you pay out of pocket when you go into the hospital, when you become inpatient, and also Medicare Part B. You do have deductible on top of the premium, and you also have that. Usually Medicare pay 80%, and you pay 20% out of pocket. So those are the gaps in the regular Medicare program. And for that, as Tammy mentioned, you have the FEHB that will pay those gaps. They serve as a kind of a inexpensive Medigap policy, if you will, because the regular Medigap policy, the commercial Medigap policy you purchase outside for those who do not have FEHB will cost much more, and they only cover for those gaps, so they only go after Medicare. If Medicare denied, they denied.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like the FEHB that Medicare may deny a preventive visit.
Yeah.
But the FEHB come back and
most federal retirees, in fact, I can't think of any federal retiree who would have FEHB who would even need to consider Medigap coverage.
Right. And people do ask for it because mm-hmm. the fact that they're not paying for Part A, but they feel like they're paying too much for FEHB.
We have a closing gap in time. I think we have a half a minute. All righty. David, final comments? Covered a lot of ground here.
Just, I think that knowing the basics about what the program is, Medicare program is, and the basics of what your FEHB is, you can make an informed choice and have the best benefits that there is for you.
Okay, Tammy, quick.
Just thanks for listening in, and tune in again next week.
Okay, we'll be here. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.